The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Boston Red Sox just finished a three-game set with the Orioles down in Baltimore, losing two games out of three. They now stand exactly at 500 at 28-28. They are in third place in the American League East. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. Join me on the show from Boca Raton, Florida, by way of Centerville, Mass, is Jeremy Schilling. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm very medium, Jason. Very medium. And you can find me on Twitter at JTShill20.
I think that's about accurate. I think that's where most Red Sox fans should find themselves, but we'll see. Also with us on the show from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman. Terry, how are you?
Not too shabby. About what I expected. I got the game sequences wrong, but I had us losing 2-1. I can be found at Cushman MLB, and credit to Jeremy for finally knowing his Twitter handle. I'll cross him off the top five list. We had him slotted for number five.
Spoiler alert, I had my Twitter account up, so I knew it.
Okay. And at Bastards_Boston is the podcast account. That's the much busier one of the two. Find me on Facebook at Terry Talks Sox. We're on YouTube, Instagram, all over the place.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, unfortunately, the Red Sox did not pull out a series win this time down there in Baltimore. They lose two games out of three. As I said, they're at 500 now. They're third place. They're only two and a half games out of the wild card. But it's still one of those kind of pivotal series, especially heading into what is a gauntlet of a schedule this coming June. So before we get into our bottom five, we give you the bottom five every week. We'll get into that, our bottom five players for sure. But let's just do a quick sort of temperature check on how you guys are feeling about the club right now. Again, we're heading into the third month of the season. May is almost over. Again, we have a brutal schedule coming up. So, Jeremy, I'll start with you. How do you feel about your baseball team right now?
I feel like a pancake in a pan that just keeps getting flipped from side to side at no particular time. And that's how I feel about the Sox. Like, after yesterday's win, I was excited and really looking forward to today's game. And then after the Crawford second inning, I'm ready to start researching my fantasy football team. And they'll do it to me until the trade deadline and they sell even though they're in it. So, I mean, that's how I feel. I was mentioning off air how I don't go to the standings every day. I kind of look twice a week, and I looked after the series expecting them to be 3 games under .500, even though I like know they're not. And it, they're just, every time I look, they're .500 or within a game. So it's just, I'm hot, cold, you know, it's just, they can't do anything consistently.
Feels very Jekyll and Hyde-ish. Yeah, I agree. So Terry, how about you? How you feel about you, the Red Sox right now?
The key stat for me, and this came out on Nesson the other day, we're 9 games below .500 against teams with a winning record. So, you know, you can give certain players praise for the better than expected starts, but you played a lot of bad baseball teams. And as you said, Jason, it's about to get real. And speaking of pancakes, I learned recently, you can't put them in a toaster. That's not going to work. Yeah, it doesn't. They fall into it. Yeah, I was trying to take a shortcut and it just didn't work. But yeah,
I'm so confused by
a pancake in a toaster. It's literally made in a pan.
Yeah, well, no, they were like frozen pancakes, and I just thought,
Terry, yeah, rookie move. I have kids. You wrap those things in a paper towel so they keep the moist, you know, steamy temperature, and you throw it in the microwave for a few seconds, man.
I'm like, here's a frozen pancake. There's a toaster. I thought I was onto something, but no, I was not. And, you know, I run my kitchen like Breslow runs his front office. But
I knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. I absolutely was. I was sitting here waiting. On the 9 games under .500 on winning teams, to me, that's just – it comes down to the talent discrepancy versus this version of the Boston Red Sox and actually good teams. You can't be that consistently bad against the winning teams, because obviously we're at .500, so we have to be 9 games better above the losing teams. So when we go and play real baseball teams with a roster that has made full major league players on the roster, we can't win. It's so frustrating.
I mean, at this point, you look at that June schedule, if you don't sweep the White Sox, you're in for some bad times. Because you're facing a lot of teams that you're probably going to lose 2 out of 3 to. So enjoy being at .500. Enjoy being in quote-unquote third place while you're there, because I don't think it's going to last much longer.
Let me pose a question to the team here. Does ownership and or management want June to go poorly so they can sell the fan base selling? Because imagine if they win. Imagine if they come out of this month like, I don't know, like 13-11 or whatever it is, and you're 2 games over .500. You're still within 2 or 3 games of the wild card. It's going to be – I know this fan base isn't paying attention for a large majority of normal Red Sox fans, but it makes it a lot harder on what they're going to do. So do you guys have an opinion on that?
I think where I stand is I think if they have an overwhelmingly good month, they won't be so tempted to sell. I don't see that happening. So I think if they have like an average month where, like you said, if they go 13-11, there's still only a few games over .500. Like, that still facilitates Kenley Jansen being traded, right? Like,
well, I'm okay with that either way.
Well, that's what I mean. So like, if they do overwhelmingly good and they're, you know, all of a sudden they're in second place and they're winning games, whatever, all of a sudden it gets a lot harder to trade your closer, assuming he's still pitching pretty well at that point. So I think what they want is they want a decent month where they don't tank, but they're just doing, they're scraping by to the point where they say, well, we're still in it, but we feel comfortable trading our $16 million a year closer to get some prospects back because, you know, he doesn't want to be here anyways. We can slide Chris Martin or Justin Slayton into that role and we'll be okay. So I think they want a decent month, but maybe not like a stellar month.
I think right now, even though they're not talking about it, I think there's a lot of contingency plans already in place. We want to trade this guy. This is what we're hoping to get. I think they're going to be sellers, and I think they know that right now. You know, what you guys are kind of getting at is what are the optics of that? And I think they can get away with anything. They can get away with murder this summer. I don't think we're engaged enough to really care. The Celtics are on the verge of a championship, so that'll keep everyone distracted for a couple more weeks. And the trade deadline, I'm not sure exactly what day it is, right around August 1st. You're probably going to move some pieces. And then if things aren't chaotic, if we aren't lighting Fenway Park on fire, you can call up your stud prospects in September and sell some seats by putting them in your lineup. I believe me, I wish there was an outrage. I hope the ratings crash, ticket sales go down. And right now, I mean, it's not sold out. You can tell, but they're not hurting right now. I mean, it's full enough. And I just want the fans to express enough frustration that this winter we'll finally make some moves. And I don't know that that's going to happen. It wouldn't shock me if they want to drop the payroll even more. Maybe $200 million will be the new mandate next year. I hate that we tolerate, as a fan base, we don't as a group, as a podcast, but the fan base tolerates it way more than they should.
Well, a prime example of that is just this series alone, facing Baltimore. And, you're going up against one of the elite teams in not just the American League, but all of baseball. So, okay, you're hoping to take one out of three. You're hoping for the best to take two out of three. You're not going to sweep the Orioles down in Baltimore, right? I think we all knew that wasn't going to happen. But what I saw from fans after the final game was, you know, Crawford gives up the grand slam to Gunnar Henderson, right? You go down 5-1. You're like, at that point, you go, it's over. This game's over. It's not happening. And I expected Red Sox fans on Twitter to be upset, pissed off, you know, passionate about, like, what the hell? This shouldn't have happened. He's been one of our better pitchers. Like, we shouldn't let this happen. Instead, I see all these tweets about, like, just wait until, you know, Mayer, Anthony, Teal, all these guys are up, and we can be just as good as Baltimore. Did you ever expect to say that sentence in your lifetime as a Red Sox fan? I hope we can be as good as the Baltimore Orioles one day. That's where the fan base is at. Like, they're already punting on this season. They don't care. So many of them have accepted this as a quote-unquote transitional year where, oh, you know, let's just hope to be relevant, stay in it a little bit. But you know what? If we get crushed by Baltimore, that's okay. Because in 2 years, we'll be as good as them. Because, of course, all of our prospects will be just as good as theirs, right? There's no way that can fail. So it's just like those of us here on the podcast, like, we watch every single game. We're invested in it. We see them. Again, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, 2.5 games out of a wild card spot. The American League sucks this year. There's a lot of bad teams. You're not out of it. And I see fans being like, well, 2025, 2026, that's when it's really going to happen. So I think that's just where we're at. It's like, they just kind of don't care. They're like, I'm ready for the future. I don't want to stress about this year. It's pathetic.
Speaking for that segment of the population, it's hard not to feel that way when you know ownership isn't going to support the team, because as Terry's admitted, and I agree, or Terry's stated his opinion, and I agree, I don't care what they do in June. I don't care what they do through mid-July. They're going to sell. So they could go on this rampage we don't expect, where the starting pitching staff goes back to where they were a month ago. We start hitting a little bit more consistently, and it goes right. You know, maybe some teams get key injuries and it goes wrong for them and we catch them at the right time, kind of like what's happened during the Celtics run. I mean, it happens, and it's not going to matter. So if you're sitting at 500 and you feel the same way I do, I understand that sentiment from the from that portion of the fan base. Now, for me personally, doing this podcast on a weekly basis, consuming baseball on the level that I do, I'm really just hoping for them to stay in it because I know that's their ceiling. When you say there's a lot of bad baseball teams in the American League, my internal response, credit to me for not talking over you for once, is is I think we might be the best bad team, but we're still a bad team and we're not getting support. We're not going to get better with the exception of Cass is coming back. And that might be something we talk about. So I'll leave it there.
Yep. No, that's totally fair. And again, I hope we do get better. And this series was one that was, we knew it was going to be challenging. You're going down to Baltimore, face one of the best teams in the league, not just the American League, but, you know, one of the best teams in the league in general. You lose 2 out of 3. You know, it could have gone better. It wasn't a complete disaster, but we still have some people that need to be held accountable. So with that, we're going to just head right into our bottom five list because we do have some questionable people on this roster that we need to call out. So, Terry, you are in the leadoff spot. I'm going to have you take the floor. Who is on number five?
So number five is someone that not many might expect, but I'm going with a new acquisition we've just gotten in the last 4 or 5 days, and that's Brad Keller, who came in after Cooper Criswell turned in a dud of a performance, and Keller pitched 4 innings, gave up 7 hits. 4 earned runs, walked 1, only struck out 2. This guy is trash. He's been trash his whole career. I'm not sure why we picked him up. Perhaps because the Whitlock news came out days before and they need a body to eat up some innings. My other thought was Chase Anderson hasn't been pitching particularly well. He's only a mop-up guy. Maybe Keller could be an upgrade over Anderson. If you want to say anything nice about Keller, and there's not many things you can say that are nice, his walk rate this year in a short sample size is only 7.9%. So that's one of the things they liked. And I already forgot which pitch, but Andrew Bailey identified one pitch, and they said, if we can improve this pitch, you'll probably pitch more effectively. But he hasn't been good. He came from the White Sox, and of all the dumpsters you can pick, that's not one you want to pick. I mean, if you pluck someone out of Tampa or LA, I compared the two. Like, the Chicago dumpster's like Discount Bob's. You're finding nothing but junk in there. Tampa, LA, that's like the Gap store. You probably won't find anything nice, but maybe. And Keller is just garbage. And then to just go through his career real quick, been in the league since 2018, pitched 5 seasons with the Kansas City Royals. His best year was, well, I'm not counting 2020. That was his best year, but let's go to his best full season. He had a 4.19 ERA across 28 starts. That was 2019. Pitched 165 innings. And then from there, he ends up with the White Sox. Basically been trash with them. That's where we're at. That's where we're at. We're just looking for warm bodies to plug in here. And for the next couple of weeks, it's going to be Brad Keller. And then it'll probably be someone else after him.
Jeremy.
So Brad Keller is a product of organizations that are trying to not spend money but catch lightning in a bottle. Oftentimes you see in baseball failed prospects get swapped between organizations hoping that a change of scenery will, you know, reset their mindset and give them a chance to get to the top of their ability. This is what that feels like to me. And it pisses me off because if that's what we're doing, then it's pathetic. It's pathetic. You're literally going to the recycling bin every time someone gets DFA'd and saying, well, a change of scenery might work. Well, nope, change of scenery didn't work. Let's do it again. Nope, let's do it again. It's like, are you kidding me? You're not even – none of these moves that they do like with Keller are meant to be long-term fixes. They're trying to catch a reliever lightning in the bottle where you just don't expect it. And there are good examples of it. Uehara was one where – at least for me, he kind of came out of nowhere and you caught lightning in a bottle for 2 years and he was extremely impactful. But that was a much different situation where you were doing it with a good team, you know, and he had an elite pitch. So, I mean, it's just one example. It happens. Relievers get traded around all the time. Someone gets hot, they have a real good year, and then they kind of go back to the mean. I don't know, man. My frustration necessarily isn't with the player because he stunk. And that Criswell start, the whole team really did. And he's only got one appearance in a Red Sox uniform. It's more of just the fact that we got to run these guys out there every couple of weeks trying to find something that'll actually work.
Yeah, this move goes back to your off season. Why didn't you get more long depth or more starting pitching depth than you did? They didn't sign any starting pitching except for Giolito, who got hurt. Now, they couldn't have planned for that, but still, that was all you did. And Brad Keller, if you can't pitch for the White Sox, what makes you think he can pitch for you? The White Sox, and maybe they're not trying. Maybe the Red Sox said, hey, you know, that's a team that's willing to tank because they're in a rebuild. They want the number one pick. They're probably going to get it. But still, like, this guy hasn't succeeded at any level. He didn't succeed with the Royals when he first came up. And he was one of their top picks, top prospects for a while. And he never cut it at the major league level. So what makes you think that you can bring him in and he's going to be anything worthwhile? He's 28 years old. He's not a rookie. Like, he's not a young guy anymore. Like, at least Criswell, who, you know, we'll get to him later, but, like, he's sort of youngish. He's a little bit younger than Keller. Like, you can still kind of mold something out of him. Keller has nothing. He's not a big league pitcher. So when I saw the signing, I was like, okay, great. A warm body. If you're getting blown out, you just throw him out there to eat the innings. And that's kind of exactly what happened. So I don't think Keller is part of your long-term plans. I think, honestly, they just signed him because they have pitchers who are hurt. They have pitchers who are gassed out. And they went, we have nobody coming up in our pipeline, which we've said on this show numerous times, you have no pitching in your minor league system to supplement your big league team. You have nothing, zero, nada. You got nothing. So that's what they have to do. They have to go out and sign 28-year-old Brad Keller to a major league contract just to go out there and eat innings and get slapped around. Like, that's where we're at. So, and this is a larger topic that I'm sure we'll get into as we get closer to the draft, but, like, you look at all these mock drafts coming out for the MLB draft, and they already have the Red Sox taking a shortstop. I'm already pissed off about it because you need to draft pitching at some point. I know everyone says, all the people who claim they're smarter than us, oh, it's too risky. They all get hurt. Don't do that. Look what happens. The Red Sox have no pitching in their pipeline. Zero. They've nobody coming up. Nobody. Maybe this kid Perales, who just got promoted to Double A, and they'll probably ruin him too because they're so desperate to have pitching. They're going to ruin him and they're going to accelerate him too fast. Like, that's why they have to go out and sign a Brad Keller, because they have no one else who can fill that position. So Brad Keller, to me, he's not good. We all know it. But he's a symbol of a larger problem with this organization and the way they've built this team. It's just, we have a good rotation, which they lucked into, by the way, because if it weren't for Andrew Bailey, they probably wouldn't have that. We'll get into that a little bit later. But they have a good starting rotation. But beyond that, it's like, if someone gets hurt, their depth is zero. They have no depth. And that's why Brad Keller's on this team. And that's pathetic.
So there's two reasons why you take a shot on a player on the scrap heap. Number one, they have one elite trait. All right? That's not what I think we have here. So what would be the second reason? Something happened in the past that they think they can recreate. So let me read to you these numbers. 41 games, 3.08 ERA in 140 innings. 4.19 ERA as a starter, full-year starter, 165 innings. Which would be great if those were the two previous years, but I just read you his stats from 2018 and 2019, 6 and 5 years ago. So you're chasing something that he hasn't been able to recreate since the beginning of his career, and he doesn't have an elite trait. So he doesn't check either the ball. I mean, you're going too far in time. It's just such a reach. So, I mean, I said what I said on the player, you know, and again, he's only had one appearance. It was obviously terrible. So
all we need to know is he wasn't good enough to play for the worst team in Major League Baseball, and now we have him. That's it.
Yep. And it would be different if you were the Atlanta Braves, because the Braves took Reynaldo Lopez off the White Sox. He was terrible with the White Sox, and now he's one of the best starters in baseball. But they're the Atlanta Braves. You're not. We've learned that. You're not as smart as them. Chris Sale is thriving over there. Vaughn Grissom can barely hit his way out of a paper bag over here. So that's the difference between the two organizations. So worthy attempt, but I don't think Brad Keller will be in too many more Red Sox games going forward. So with that, we'll move on to number four on our bottom five. And it's a guy that we hate to put him on here, but he did have a very quiet series, and it's Jarren Duran. A guy who I think we can all agree is one of our favorite players on this team. Has had an awesome start to this year, but he had a very quiet series, 1-for-12 out of that leadoff spot. And the strikeout problem continues to mount. 6 strikeouts in 3 games this series. So including 3 in game 1. So he almost had a golden sombrero in game one. Not a good series from him offensively. And again, he's the guy that if he doesn't get on base, he doesn't really provide you much. He has to get on base and wreak havoc there, and especially as a leadoff hitter. So if he's not doing that, then he's automatically setting your offense back a little bit. So it's tough because you ran into some good pitching this series. You know, maybe Cole Irvin was one of their weaker pitchers, but Grayson Rodriguez, even though they got to him, is a good pitcher. Corbin Burns, we know how good he is. So he ran some good pitching, but again, it's just one of those things where as a team, you ran into an elite team. You ran into a team that has better pitching, better offense than you do. And you were hoping for Jarren Duran to be that catalyst that he's been all year. He couldn't do it. You know, 1-for-12, didn't really get on base, struck out too many times. So it's tough. It's tough putting him on the bottom five because I believe that he's an important part of your future. I'm not a member of the trade Jarren Duran club. You know, I don't know if there is a club for that, but I'm not in favor of trading him. I know that at some point you'll have to think about it. But, you know, I again, like for me, I look at what Jarren Duran does at the big league level, and I compare that to everyone's Lord and Savior, Mr. Roman Anthony, who's sitting in the 230s in Double A. And I go, yeah, I'm good with Jarren Duran, honestly. So tough series for him, but I'm not too worried about him. I think he'll pick it back up. Hopefully the month of June, as tough as the schedule is, that he can still pick it up for you in the leadoff spot. So, Jeremy, what are your thoughts on Jarren Duran?
I, like you, love the player. The trade Jarren Duran club is a one club. There's one member in that club. His name is Terry. There's the problem is he's hitting leadoff. They rely on him so tremendously. And one of my favorite sayings in baseball is you can't steal first base. So he has one walk and one hit in 13 trips to the plate. It just makes it really, really difficult to set the table for the guys that are hitting, because Ref Schneider was 5-for-13, Wong 3-for-11, Devers 5-for-11. It's tough when those guys are hitting when there's no one on base, because that's really the limit of your offense. And I've said this every time we have to put him on this list, because I feel like he's either scorching hot or scorching cold. He sets the table, and when it's this much of a dud, it just makes it really, really hard to win. Because I've said it, if you can get the 5 runs with this pitching staff, you should be winning games, and they can't get there if he doesn't show up and set the table. So I do like the player. He's on the list because he didn't have a good series. He's not on the list. Isn't a creation of who we hate. It's who stunk in this series. Jared Duran stunk, and that's it. It doesn't mean I think he's going to be on the list every time, although for whatever reason, the Sunday night show doesn't have to put him on the list, and we do, and I have to keep bashing on one of my favorite current Red Sox. I got to pay Charlie or somebody to flip spots with me for a couple weeks so I can have some fun. God damn it. I can say that.
Yeah, you're good.
You're allowed. Yep.
So just to set the record straight, I'm only like halfway into the fan club. I mean, if we're getting an organization's top pitching prospect, like their number one pitching prospect, and, you know, a top 2 or 3 hitting prospect, I would be okay with it. I'm not trading him just to trade him. I'm not getting a low ball package and then moving Duran.
Can we not do the trading the established Major League Baseball player for prospect thing?
Well,
Harry, you I've actually forced you to agree with me on this point.
You're not going to get – no team that's trying to win the World Series this year is going to give you anything out of their rotation. So you're only getting prospects in this case.
You shouldn't trade them. You shouldn't trade a proven big league commodity.
There's a logjam. Now, see, I'm an Abreu guy, so that's part of the thing. I want to keep Abreu. He's 3 years younger. I think his ceiling is much higher. I think Duran is at his ceiling right now. I think he's a 280 guy. He's slipped down to like 262 or something like that at the moment. But a hot series, he can get right back up there. I think Abreu's going to be at a minimum a 2080 guy once he gets going, and that's who I want to keep. And his defense is pretty good, if not better, actually, because he's got a better arm. So that's the guy I want to keep. If they decide that Abreu's the guy they'd rather trade, then I'm not in at all on trading Duran. It's just we have a logjam here, and we can't keep all the lefties. And, you know, I think Duran, like I said, I think he's at his ceiling. I think his value is as high as it's going to be. So that's part of the reason why. But I'm a big Duran guy, and that's the jersey I want. If he's still here on August 2nd, I'm probably buying a Duran jersey. But anyway, so let's get back to this series, though. Two things that stand out to me. Number one, he's only drawn 1 walk since May 17th. So almost 2 weeks here, only 1 walk. How many bases do you think he's stolen in all of May?
Oh, I would say, I don't think he's stolen a single one, has he?
He's stolen 2 bases, yeah. One of them was the Tampa series where it was a weird double steal, though. I forget who. Yeah, I don't think it was Wong. Someone stole second, and then Duran came in from third.
It was Abreu stole second.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So that was one of them. So he's only straight up stolen second base just one time the whole month. So that's a little curious to me. Like, I mean, he's not hurt. He's still, we've seen him go from first to home a bunch of times, and he's hit. We'll see. Do I have the triples up? He's hit 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 triples in the month of May. So there's no issues there. I just maybe the pitching and catching on the opposing teams has kind of found a way to keep him at bay. But it was one of the things that kind of made him more lethal that we're not seeing. So not going to kill the guy. And Jeremy, you made a great point on previous podcasts. Sam, giving you credit. Let the record show on May 29th. I'm giving Jeremy credit. If Duran and Abreu, really, if both of them are off, you're not winning. If both of them are on, you're winning games. So it's really around them. Devers is always going to do his thing, but he needs a couple other guys to do their thing in front of him for anything he does to matter. So, you know, that's where we're at. That's the offense we have. And I hate putting Durant on this list, but 1 for 12.
1 for 12 with a walk puts you on the list. Doesn't matter who you are.
Yep, exactly. And like Terry said, if you're striking out and you're not utilizing your speed and stealing bases, because he's not on the list because it wasn't a, you know, not going to mention him, but like David Hamilton has started to utilize his speed. He's starting to steal bases more and more, which is what he should do as a guy who's, you know, he's not, he doesn't have the luxury of Durant hitting leadoff, but like bottom of the order, he's still making things happen. So
can I share something with just you guys? No one else is listening.
Sure.
I'm starting to like Hamilton.
I am too.
I get excited when he gets on base. He's athletic and quick, and our up the middle defense has been solidified with Rafaela back in center. So I'm like, I'm starting to kind of start my little Hamilton fan club.
Yep.
Let me just see, because I was already starting to pull it up before you mentioned it. I just want to see where he is in May. What do you think his batting average is in the month of May?
Probably 260.
I would be, actually, I'd be willing to guess his low 300s. he's been hitting.
You're correct. He's hitting 311 with a 380 on base.
How many at-bats, Terry?
45.
So the thing that surprised me is he's starting to shoot the ball in the gap and not necessarily hit for power, but he's turning some of these singles into doubles. And then when he gets on first base, he immediately puts stress on the defense because he's a flight risk. So, you know, and this is what I want from Durant, because Durant's going to hit leadoff the rest of the year, assuming health. It just a base hit, a walk is not a base hit and a walk. If on the second or third pitch, you steal second, it's quickly a double and you're putting stress on the defense. If you're in a one run game, it opens up opportunities with bunting. And if you have the right hitter, contact hitter at the plate, pushing the ball to the right side to make sure we get the third and we can score a run without a hit. Like, he's doing a lot of the things I kind of want Durant to do. Except Durant has a much bigger inside and can hit the ball out of the ballpark, although he's not.
And he's of the how many times has he been on base here? 14 hits and 5 walks. So of the 19 times he's been on base, he's stolen 6 bags. So one out of every 3 times he's on. Yeah, so quietly, Hamilton's kind of putting together a good year. Now, is that sustainable? I don't think so, but we'll, you know, obviously take it for as long as we can get it.
I will say this, too. Hamilton is starting to take walks. I mean, he drew a 4-pitch walk against Corbin Burns in that finale. So if he can start to, you know, be a little more patient at the plate, not strike out as much, I think the bat is waking up. I don't love him at shortstop. It's not his natural position. I think he's better at second base, but you don't have a choice because Grissom is so bad defensively. He can't go anywhere else. But if it allows you to play Rafaela in center field more often going forward, that's good for this team. So honorable mention to David Hamilton, who I agree. I think he's been picking up, and I've been impressed with what he's done so far in May. So with that, we'll continue with the opposite side of the spectrum, the bottom 5. And Jeremy, you are coming in now at number 3. Who do you got on that list?
Cutter Crawford. It's tough because I'm going to say some nice things about him. But let's start with the negative, because Terry makes me. So 6 innings, 5 runs, 5 earned, 4 hits. He did walk 2. His ERA is up to 3.29 and his WHIP's 1.19, so 1.2. He is being done in by one bad inning. The second inning was not good. He did not command the ball well at all. On the pitch to Gunnar Henderson, which was basically a center cut cutter, he got absolutely jobbed by the home plate umpire the pitch before. It was like right down the middle. It was almost like he threw the same exact pitch to prove that it was a strike, and he absolutely murdered that baseball. That's where the negativity stops for me, because that's really it. He's getting killed by one inning. I think the start before, he had a 3-run inning, but then he still pitched 6 innings. And he did the same thing today. And if you hit it all, you could have got back in that game. And he gave you every opportunity to get back in the game. We just didn't do it. Now, here's the other thing he did. He saved the bullpen. We threw Keller in game one, Anderson today, 3 yesterday. Half the bullpen didn't pitch. Half the bullpen's going into tomorrow, not having thrown in 4 days. So we went from thinking, oh, God, this is going to end up being a surprise bullpen game to, I mean, we're going to lose, but he really, and that's not easy to do. I mean, you got to be dejected. You got to be frustrated. And yet he bared down. He gave you the chance to get back in the game, and he protected the rest of the roster and the bullpen. So he deserves to be on the list. The pitch to Henderson was absolutely awful. I didn't think he was particularly sharp really all day, but he did enough to get through the 6 innings minus the second. So second was absolutely too. You're as a starter, you can't give up five runs like that. You can't do it. You deflate the offense. You take away the running game to a certain extent. You take away the hit and runs, the bunts, the things we need to do as a team that's not going to hit the ball out of the ballpark at a high rate. And that's why he is number 3 on today's bottom 5.
Terry.
So here's a kind of a crazy stat. Of the 12 games that he started, and this isn't all his fault, but it's just the way that it went, the Red Sox have only won 3 times when he started. And I'm talking about the team, not whether he got credited with the win or not. So 9 out of his 12 starts, the Red Sox have lost for one reason or another. Now, the last 3 out of 4 starts, we've lost because of him. He has been the reason why, whereas in most of April, it was just a lack of run support. So I don't know. I mean, we knew he was going to eventually come down to earth. I mean, after May 1st, his ERA was 1.56, and now it's more than doubled that. It's 3.29 now. It went up 40 points just today with that 5-run inning. And one of the things that they worked on with Cutter was the off-speed stuff. Like, he has been a product of the, you know, the new Andrew Bailey program. And the reason why they've focused the off-speed stuff a lot with him was because his fastball, it wasn't a plus fastball. And so they said, if we could make your sweeper a little bit more elite and your cutter, your fastball, you know, will be more effective. And I think the book is out on him at this point. So now it's up to him to make some adjustments here, to kind of turn the tables a little bit. And I don't know if that's really who he is. I mean, he's a career 4-something ERA guy just over the course of a few years. So I don't think he's going to, I think he's going to get roughed up pretty bad throughout the rest of the season here, because if he can't command the off-speed stuff, he's cooked. He's cooked. That's all he's got. And he left a meatball over the plate. And the key moment for me, it was the at-bat before Gunner, when he walked James McCann, who's not an elite bat. I mean, he can run into one, just like Ref Snyder can run into one. But when you walk that guy who's otherwise not a threat, and now you got to face the biggest threat, and you just get obliterated in one swing of the bat, I mean, that was when we lost the game, was the McCann at bat. Because you're out of the inning, and you're tied 1-1, I think, at that point.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
And just quickly, the reason why I disagree is because he's limiting the damage to one inning. If he was inconsistent across the start, I would tend to, and I'm not saying you're going to be wrong, because obviously you could be right, and I've admitted he's going to regress towards the mean. I was just hoping the mean would be more like 3.5 and less, and he could still do that. It's just there's encouragement in his ability to come back in the face of today, which was just an absolutely major failure. Major failure. You could have taken all the money you wanted from me, because I would have bet that he would have been out of that game by the end of the third inning. And he finds a way to come back, and that's so encouraging. So as bad as the second was, and I'll admit how bad it was and how he's having those problems, you know, and I don't know what it is. I mean, I'm sure Bailey's talking to him today on the flight. Like, what's going on? Are you getting frustrated by something, or is there the umpires blowing some calls and you feel like you're being slighted and you're getting frustrated? You're not staying as mentally focused in those moments, you know, as you should be, which I don't think is the case, because then he gets focused and he fixes it and he preserves the bullpen. So I think he can still be really good. And we've talked about this in the past. I think his delivery is a real asset. The ability to hide the baseball, you know, there's just plenty of examples of guys that can do it that have been effective with less than elite stuff. So, you know, I still like the player. I like what he did today. Honestly, if you were to say at the end of the day, are you more frustrated than encouraged? I'd say I'm probably more encouraged by today's outing. He didn't have his best stuff, and yet he fought for six innings and gave you a chance.
Just real quick. So I think I've said this recently, but I've been listening mostly to the away broadcasts. You know, being out of market, you can pick, and I've been listening to the away ones. And the only one I hate so far, and I probably, quite frankly, won't listen to them again next time they come back, I don't like the Tampa crew for some reason. I don't know what it is. I don't like them. But the Baltimore crew was at pains to point out, and they were kind of getting frustrated. Even after that second inning, he was still hanging balls, and they just weren't crushing him for some reason.
Yeah, he wasn't sharp.
And then in the fourth inning, it was kind of a messy inning. I mean, he got the strikeout for Cedric Mullins, who really hasn't been good for a couple of years. And then he walks Mateo in the next at bat. And then the at bat after that, he hits Ramon Urias. That was the second hit by pitch of the game. And then he was very fortunate. He got a strikeout, and then Mateo, for some reason, wanted to try to steal third base and got thrown out. So
I thought he was safe.
Well, he took his hand off the bag. He took his right hand off the bag and then didn't get his knee on it quick enough is where they got him. And then his right hand was hooked around Devers's arm. So I thought he was safe until like the third or fourth time I looked at the replay. And then, you know, I was able to see it finally, but that was a situation where Crawford kind of lucked out. And so he had some things go his way. I think it could have been a worse start this time around anyway. And he's in line to face the Atlanta Braves next. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm not down on Cutter Crawford in general. I still think that he's one of your better starters, and I'm not super worried. But so, okay, you can hold the one start against him. That's fine. But, like, if you look at April, the month of April, he had a 1.65 ERA and, you know, was five starts, 1.65. He was one of your best pitchers. May, that ERA jumped to 4.66 in the same amount of starts, five starts. And the month of April, he didn't give up a single homer. The month of May, he's given up four. So I wonder if just teams are starting to figure him out. They're like, okay, we know what he likes. We know what pitches he likes to throw. And they're just kind of sitting back on it. So this is where you kind of get into the debate of, you know, is Andrew Bailey being a little too predictable with his game plan? Or is it more just Cutter Crawford doesn't have the arsenal to really keep batters fooled and, you know, to keep up what he did in April? So it's been a tough stretch for him. I don't have high hopes for June. Again, as Terry mentioned, he's got the Braves coming up next. Like, I don't think he's going to get many breaks coming up this month. So the month of June will be a very telltale month for Cutter Crawford in terms of like how he does. And does he settle down a little bit? Does he kind of get back to his April form a little bit, or does it continue to go sideways? Because if it goes sideways, that's a big problem for the Red Sox, because this is a guy that emerged, I don't want to say out of nowhere, but he emerged more than you thought he would, and he's really stabilized your rotation because of that. If he goes backwards, you're looking at a situation where Hauk and, you know, maybe Bayo, if he can battle, those are your two starters, because we'll get to some other guys later on, but, like, you know, if Crawford goes backwards, if Criswell is going to go backwards, like, if Pivetta can stay healthy, he looks like he can be the guy, but what if he suffers what Crawford's going through and he starts to regress? Like, all of a sudden, your biggest strength might become a weakness going forward. And if your lineup can't produce consistently, you've got a real problem on your hands. So, again, I'm not super worried. I think Crawford can figure it out. I think he's in the middle of a tough stretch here, but I also worry that he's got some tough offenses coming up in this upcoming schedule, and I just don't know if that's the best way for him to get back on track. So not a good start for him. I agree with Jeremy that, like, I'm glad he battled through and, you know, kind of saved your bullpen a little bit because they don't have many off days coming up. But that was kind of all he did well, because otherwise, like, you can't walk James McCann, the number nine hitter, who, I'm sorry, in his heyday, sure, he could run into one. Nowadays, he can't hit. He can't hit. James McCann cannot hit. He's a good, solid backup catcher. You don't have to worry about him. Just get him out. You have two outs, get him out. Don't let the lineup go roll over to Gunnar Henderson, because we know what he can do. So, to me, I'm sorry, I put that on Crawford. Like, you got the number nine hitter up there. You have a chance to get out of the inning. Get him out. Get him out. Don't let the inning go to Gunnar Henderson, because you know what he can do. So
two quick points, and then, you know, assuming Terry has nothing more, but you really should not be walking the 7-8-9 hitters. Nope. Right? I mean, even as good as the Orioles are, your 7-8-9 hitters, they're just typically not high threats. You can deal with a base hit. You can deal with a double. But if you're just going to automatically put them on base with a walk, it's just crippling. It's so frustrating. You know, it maybe second place to you finally get a lead and then walk the leadoff hitter the next inning. So you just can't let people like that get on base without earning it. You know, and I don't have a problem if he rips the ball in the gap. I mean, at least you're in the strike zone and trying to get him out. But a free base runner is just so frustrating in that circumstance. I don't know if I'm going to end up on clown tit. Do you want to say something on that, Terry?
I just had a cutter thing, but you can finish.
I don't want to end up on clown takes, okay? But I'm going to say it anyways because I actually do believe it. I think for certain players, and Crawford is a candidate, one, maybe two times a year, you skip a start. It feels like it might be time to skip a start with Cutter Crawford. He's trending the wrong way. His stuff was not good today. He's throwing more innings than he really ever has. The problem is I don't think we have the depth necessarily to do it. So that's kind of the issue here. But if we had some depth, if we had someone that could go out and give you three or four innings, that's like our long reliever, it just feels like that brave start could be a skip the start type of situation. And then you do it again in August. So he's fresh and ready to go in September, if you're in it. And, you know, I think there are multiple people on this pitching staff. Bayo is another one where I feel like he's going to be a candidate maybe in a couple weeks to skip a start. You want to keep guys healthy, limit their innings for the entire season, try to avoid injury. Like it just feels like that would be appropriate for a few guys on the staff. Unfortunately, it's not going to happen, because they're 500 and they don't have the organizational depth to have a sixth starter that can just jump in and spot start and protect guys' health.
Well, no, I mean that should be okay, because they have that guy they picked up in the Rule 5. Garrett Whitlock. Oh, no, that's right. No, he's done. Yeah.
They broke
him. Getting a second elbow surgery. Yeah,
I just
okay.
Teed Jason up. I just teed him up.
No, so that's okay. No, it's okay, though. You signed Brad Keller. He's awesome. I'm sure he'll be great. Let's see. If you don't want to use him, what about Brian Mata, who we've been hearing about for 5 years? Oh, no, that's right. His shoulder is messed up, and he's done too. Yeah, it would be really nice if you had anyone in AAA who could pitch worth a damn. We could just call up and be like, hey, you know what? You know, Cutter Crawford's going to reach his innings limit. Brian Bayo probably will too. Tanner Houck probably will too. We're exhausting our pitching staff. Let's call this guy up. Oh, no, we don't have anybody because, once again, we have to draft shortstops. And we're going to draft another one this year. Get ready. A month from now, I'm going to be the biggest a-hole about the Red Sox draft because they will draft a shortstop. I guarantee it. They will draft another one instead of drafting a pitcher because, oh, it's too risky. No, no, no. That's all. So let's draft 19 shortstops, no pitching, and let's just hope for the best. That's a great way to run it. So, yeah, you're right. I agree. Crawford probably could use a rest because he's probably going to be exhausted by August. But we have no pitching because why draft? That's too risky. It's stupid to draft pitching. It's too risky. No, draft another shortstop. That's great. Yep.
So here's who Crawford lines up with. He's going to get the first game in the Braves series. He will most likely get the White Sox finale, so maybe that's the cupcake matchup that he needs. But right after that, he's got the Yankees in the opening game of that series. That is at home. And that would put him in line to face the Blue Jays, who are sputtering. I mean, I think they could get it together, but we don't know that. There's rumblings maybe Bichette is on the trade block and they could go through a quick retooling, but that's who he's up against. And my final question before we move on: if the Red Sox had let's not say an elite rotation but an above average rotation, let's say a big market rotation, based on what you've seen from Crawford this year, what number starter is he? Because to me, he's a number four. That's what he really is.
Yeah, four or five. Yeah.
And we need him to be the number two that he was for a little while, but it's just not realistic. And that's where I'm at with Crawford.
Yep. I mean, I feel like you're getting out of Cutter Crawford what the Atlanta Braves were hoping to get out of, like, Chris Sale or Charlie Morton. Like, let's just sign a, you know, older guy, veteran to fill out the back end of the rotation. And if he has a bad start here and there, that's fine because the front end is so good, we don't have to worry about it. But you're right. Like, Crawford has to be our number two, and that's kind of pathetic. And I hope he gets back to his April form, but oof, I have a lot of concerns. So with that, we'll move back to the offensive side of things. So, Jeremy, you're in the number two slot. Who do we got coming in at number two?
The first base combo of Dominic Smith and Garrett Cooper. Let me read some stats for you. Dominic Smith, who, by the way, I'm impressed defensively. That's the last good thing I'm going to say. He's hitting 192 with one home run, 11 RBIs, three runs scored. Garrett Cooper, 225, one home run, 10 RBIs. The problem with that is that with the Cubs this year in 12 games, he hit 270. So with Boston, he's only hitting 192. So you literally have your options at first base right now are 190. Neither guy is hitting. Smith went 0 for 11 with two Ks. He did have an RBI today. And Cooper was 1 for 5. I mean, my God, I don't want to say bring back Bobby Dahl back because I don't want to do that either, but this is just a bleep show. It's an absolute bleep show. So, I mean, we're at the mercy of waiting for the guy that should hopefully be there for the next 10 years in Tristan Casas. But while we're waiting, I mean, it's just, we talked earlier about how you take scrap heaps and you hope you catch lightning in a bottle. Guys, we're not batting a good percentage on that. These guys are another version of Keller, and they stink. They stink. I mean, it's just an automatic out, and it's so frustrating. And I've said this in the past, so I'm not going to go over the point more than I need to, but at a position where you should expect power, we're not getting literally anything. I wouldn't even care if they were hitting 192 and doing the Schwarber thing and hitting a home run a week or two. But it's an absolute nothing burger, and it's extremely frustrating when you're just not hitting besides the guys I mentioned earlier. So, you know, that's it.
Terry.
So, Breslow, we're going to get to some key guys, but the pitching's been okay. We have slipped, the rotation slipped to number five, by the way, which is the lowest it's been. It was number one, I think, as recently as last week, but we're dropping. But so Breslow has done okay with the pitching, but when you look at this lineup, everyone he's added has been trash. Like, there's been nobody good. There's been no demonstration whatsoever that Breslow can fill an offensive need adequately and get somebody very serviceable. And the most notable guy had to leave Baltimore for Boston to get imaging on his knee. That would be the Golden Sombrero leader of the Red Sox in 2024, Tyler O'Neill. So and then you look at first base. I've harped on this. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on it other than this next 2 seconds. First base is generally the easiest problem to solve. Somewhere on the roster, you can find somebody to play you an adequate first base, except we can't. In 2024, we can't. And you're getting Costas back, but it's been an epic failure at that position. Even getting depth, you don't have a backup first baseman. I mean, look at that'd be an apples to oranges thing. I won't go there, but so it's just offensively, where's the help coming from? This year, it's not. There's no help coming.
No, and that's the thing. Your next first baseman in your pipeline is Nico Cavadas, who is tearing it up in the minors, but everyone you talk about him with is like, oh, major league pitching will eat him up. Okay, well then, what's the point of that? That feels like Lars Anderson all over again. Like, all right, he's first baseman, but can't play the big league level, so what's the point? Like, and it's just, I know people got on me when I said, why didn't you get like Costas insurance heading into this year? He was hurt a lot in the minor leagues before he came up here. Like, he's had injury history, and they didn't get a corner infielder to fill out this roster, and like, there were options out there. So it just, and I want to give Breslow credit because at least he had the balls to do what Chaim never would, which is like getting major league talent to fill an absence. And I know Garrett Cooper and Dominic Smith have disappointed, but they're two players who have had major league experience. And Dom Smith played like almost every game at first base for the Nationals last year, and he wasn't bad. He hit .250, you know. He was fine. Nothing spectacular, but he was good. So I give Breslow credit for that, but it's just, it hasn't worked out. Garrett Cooper looks like he's cooked. And Dom Smith, you know, he's okay defensively. He's made a couple of nice plays there, but even he kind of offensively looks lost. So, you know, Costas gets hurt. Breslow goes out and gets major league talent, quote unquote, but, you know, it's the low end of that. I feel like what he's doing is he's trying to do this thing where he goes, well, I'm going to go get guys that you've heard of. Garrett Cooper, Dominic Smith. Those are names that you've heard. I'm going to go get them because you've heard of them. It'll look like I'm trying, but at the end of the day, it's not really trying. He knew what those results were going to be. Like, those guys were not going to produce anything. And Costas, like, he's not going to be back till late July. And by then, you might be out of it, especially with the schedule coming up. So it's just another example of the Red Sox kind of like feigning interest in contending. But at the end of the day, they're kind of like, eh, no, we'd rather not. We'd rather just keep it cheap, keep it simple, and we're on to 2025 when the big three come up and we're going to be awesome like Baltimore. It's just, as frustrated as I am with the first base combo, I know what it is. It's ownership and it's the GM kind of being in coos, being like, nah, instead of like trading a prospect for a first baseman that can actually do something, let's just sign these two bums and hopefully they can like steal us a few games. We can kind of hang in it and then we can sell to the fan base. Oh, we tried. And again, I think a large portion of Red Sox fans are kind of stupid. They'd be like, oh yeah, no, Breslow tried. I'm a Bres bro. He tried. Dominic Smith, he's not bad. Did you see what he did with the Nationals? Like, that they'll buy into it. So you're not going to get much, if anything, out of this combo. Cooper and Smith. Cooper's cooked, and Smith, I blame the Mets for ruining him. Because I think at one point he could have been a good player, but the Mets called him up too early and they ruined him. So you're not going to get much. It's just you have to hope for Casas to come back by late July and hopefully he's back to what he was, you know, towards the end of last year, which that's not even a guarantee. So it's just the first base position, like for this team, again, you're a big market team. First base is so easy to figure out and they can't figure it out. And they haven't been able to do since Ortiz left. And like, it's just, it's kind of pathetic. So, you know, Casas, I hope he's back by after the All-Star break. I'm not even sure that's going to be true.
No, it'll be by the end of June, I think.
Which is good because, yeah. And that's what they need because, like, they're going to go through a gauntlet this month. So, like, if he can come back, if they can survive and Casas can come back and play first base, that's huge. Assuming their pitching doesn't nosedive. But even then, I'm not sure it's going to be good enough. So, again, I want to give Breslow a little bit of credit because he's doing what Chaim never did, which is let me go get major league players who have proven success at the major league level to replace this position where a guy is hurt, as opposed to just, I don't know, let me call up some bum. Let me just put Bobby Dahl back there because I don't really care and I want a better draft position. So I'll give Breslow credit for that, but it just hasn't worked out. And hopefully Casas is back sooner than rather than later because these two guys can't get it done.
And before we move to the last one here, like how much of a difference is Casas really going to make? I mean, it's going to help obviously to a degree, but I don't think it's enough. I still think you're far too flawed. You're adding another lefty, so that's going to drop Abreu, I think. You're not going to have lefty, and then a righty in the three hole, then Devers, then Casas. It's going to be a wonky lineup.
I think the ideal thing is that Tyler O'Neill gets his knee figured out and gets healthy the same time Casas does. Because then you've got the righty bat to, you know, put in between him and Devers. But even then, it's, I don't know. Yeah, I'm with you. It's like, it'd be nice to have him back, but does it really make your offense that much better? I'm not sure. Maybe a little bit, but yeah.
I mean, it at least provides a threat to hit the ball out of the ballpark. And the offense is so starved for power right now that even if he starts off slow coming off the injury, his presence is going to make a difference. The other thing is he gets on base at a good clip because he's very patient at the plate. So, you know, it's nine guys that got a hit. So, I mean, he's one guy. It's not like a basketball team getting a starter back and the impact that would have. It's not the same. But, I mean, first, guys, they're hitting 192 with virtually no power. I mean, it's bad. So he's going to help. It's just it's tough across a lineup that has so many holes.
I asked someone recently, I said the Angels were a fourth place team basically several years in a row with Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani on their roster, two of the greatest hitters we'll ever see. And they were still a fourth place team. And then I asked them, I'm like, so on your Red Sox right now, who's your Trout and Shohei? And Devers is the obvious one to throw in there. But then after that, who's the other? It's just we're bad. So anyway, so getting into the one slot here, that's my slot this week. That's going to be Cooper Criswell, who gave by far the worst start of his season so far. Four innings, six hits, six earned runs, walked one, only struck out two, and the strikeout numbers had been rising. He had a 9 strikeout game against the Nationals, 3 starts before, but only 2 strikeouts here. His earned run average went from 2.86 to 3.96, over a full run higher now. And I said right after, and I've been an advocate of Criswell to a point, like I would still go to him before I went to Whitlock to avoid trying to break Whitlock, but too late, we broke him anyway. But still, you can't have your velocity topping out at 89 miles an hour and still being a pitcher in MLB. You're just not, that's just not gonna survive. You can't live on that. And I tweeted that at some point during the game, and so many people were like, well, Maddux could do it. Maddux is the unicorn in that lane. You know, Cooper Criswell is not Greg Maddux.
You always love when they use a first ballot Hall of Famer as the comparison to the fifth starter in the rotation that wasn't even planned to be there.
In a top 3 or 4 pitcher of his era, really.
Yeah.
You know, you can't set the bar there, but the thing I want to point out here before I kick it to you guys is if this Criswell thing goes sideways and the league's figured him out, because he can't, they know 90 something is never going to come at them. He's a guy that's been attributed to being helped by Bailey. Crawford, you know, is going the wrong way, and he is a Bailey guy. After that, the only guy really, really displaying the Andrew Bailey magic is Tanner Houck at this point. That's it. So what's your pitching coach? You know, maybe a little bit overrated. I don't know. It's too early. Maybe they'll adjust. Maybe there's a way to turn the tables here. Maybe they will start mixing in some fastballs finally. But suddenly your pitching staff is not what you thought it was. And we're not going to know how great Andrew Bailey is, quite frankly, for at least another year or two.
That's fair. So Criswell to me on this roster would be best served in the long reliever role. And then doing what we were talking about during the Crawford segment, which is spot starting to give guys a skip in the rotation. The other thing is his stuff, I think, is just going to play better against bad teams, where this Orioles lineup is just very talented. They've got some guys that, what do they have, 2-3 guys that already have 10-plus bombs. So, you know, I mean, they hit for power. They do a lot of things right. They're, you know, today, even though they were up 5-1, they were still being aggressive on the bases. It puts a lot of stress on a guy that doesn't have elite stuff. Against the White Sox of the world, you know, some of these other teams that he's faced, I think he can find success. I think he's a big leaguer. I do. You just don't want to see him every fifth day. So going back to my Crawford point, he feels like the guy that if we did have organizational depth would be the long reliever and then would be able to spell some guys or step in if there's an injury. But we're forced to put that guy in the line, in the rotation. And he got exposed today. Not today. He got exposed a couple days ago against a really good Orioles team, a team that I think is probably going to be a semifinalist. So, you know, tough spot, tough start. Wasn't good, you know, set things off on a bad foot for the whole series when you just don't have a chance, you know, within 45 minutes of the first game of the series.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm super worried about Criswell in the long term. I still think that he's valuable towards the back end of that rotation. I consider him found money because you didn't give up much for him. Like he was just kind of out there. So, but he doesn't have electric stuff, and that's something you have to live with. Like at times he's going to go up against an elite lineup like Baltimore and he's going to get torched. That's going to happen. So it's one of those things where I think he was giving you more than you expected to start the year. That was great. But now so June is going to be super interesting for a guy like Cooper Criswell because he's going to face some really tough lineups, like some elite lineups. And I don't know if he's going to survive. June is going to be kind of a do or die, you know, month for him because he might go through it okay, you know, and he might get through it and you sort of say, eh, it wasn't perfect, but again, he's your number five. And he shouldn't be your number five, but, you know, Giolito got hurt. Whitlock got hurt. This is what you're with. So if he's at least serviceable and he can somewhat pitch deep into games, that's fine. But if he starts getting, like, lit up where he's giving up 6-7 runs every start and you're just out of it every five games that he starts, that's not okay. Not for where the Red Sox are right now. And, again, like, this is where I break from – other Red Sox fans, because they would look at that and say, well, it's a developmental year. It's a transitional year. Who cares? No, no, no. You're 2.5 games out of the wild card. You should not accept getting your brains beat in every 5 days because you had to settle for Cooper Criswell. You can do better than that. So if he struggles in June, if he's really bad and he's giving up 4, 5, 6 runs every start, then you need to make an adjustment because this should not be a year where you just punt because, oh, we're waiting on Mayer, Anthony, and Teal. No, like Casas will be back by late June, July. Yoshida is starting to swing a bat soon. You're going to get guys back. You don't have a bad team. You're not in the basement. You're in there. So Criswell, to me, has to kind of keep his spot in the rotation these next couple of starts in June. He cannot get lit up the way he did the other night. That was really bad. That was not acceptable. And it provoked a guy like Brad Keller having to come in and be even worse. So Criswell has to at least be decent enough that he keeps you in the game and the game is not out of reach. If he gives up 3 or 4 runs, that's okay. I'm okay with that. Because, again, he's your back-end rotation guy that you fell into. And your offense should be good enough that you can catch up to that. If he's giving up 6-7 runs each time and teams have figured him out and they're just teeing off on him, then you need to find another solution. And that involves Breslow having to make a trade for a starter, or he's got to be aggressive, because if they just allow that to keep happening, then they are telling you, we don't care about winning this year. And that's, for me, as a Boston Red Sox fan, not acceptable. Nope, I will not accept that. There are Red Sox fans who will, because they're delusional and they're like, oh, we just can't wait for 2026 when we're going to be as good as Baltimore, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. But for this year, not acceptable. You're 2.5 games out of a playoff spot. Like, make a move. If Criswell's not going to do it, you know you're not getting Giolito back, so make a move. That's where Breslow, I think, is going to be tested, because you're heading into June. You're soon to be heading into July. Like, there are going to be pitchers available on the trade market. Is he bold enough to make a move? Does he have the balls to trade for a pitcher that might put you over 500 and put you into the wild card spot? Or is he just going to go, well, we could trade for that, but, you know, we have such a good farm system and, you know, this was a transitional year, at which point he's basically telling you, we don't care about this year. We're going to suck. And he's giving you the middle finger. That's what it's going to come down to. So I hope Criswell turns it around and kind of makes that decision for him and, you know, figures it out and is at least a serviceable number five starter. But if he doesn't, then, oh boy, Breslow's first test is coming up real soon.
I think if we're going to, we could possibly acquire a long-term asset at the deadline, even though we're out of it, a pitcher, but it's going to have to be from a bad team that's not expected to make the playoffs, because why would they deal him otherwise? So you could look at the Angels system. Just kind of, obviously there's no one in Colorado you're going to want, but yeah, I mean, I don't know if the White Sox have anyone you're interested in, but it would have to be someone from a bad team with multiple years of control. That's the only way it would make sense. But I think we're on DFA patrol, really, is what we're on. You know, we got Brad Keller this week. Who can we get next week? And I think that's where we're at.
Yeah, I'll just be brief here. I think there's a chance that he doesn't even have the ability to make those moves.
Yeah.
I mean, I think ownership is probably saying, don't you dare spend any money.
And that's what I was worried about. So I was going to ask, like, to close out the show, who makes more starts for the Red Sox beyond, let's say, we'll call it June 1st. Beyond June 1st, who makes more starts for the Red Sox? Brad Keller or a starting pitcher from another team anywhere in the MLB?
I would say the latter.
Yeah, same.
I don't think Keller's long. If he gives up two more starts in a row like that, or appearances, I should say, he's out 5,000, I would say.
Okay. So you do think that he'll at least make a move beyond Brad Keller?
Yeah, it's just going to be just a gauntlet of scrap heap guys, I think, is all. So.
Okay. Well, we will see again. We've got a hell of a schedule coming up in June. And we will break that down, including our series prediction show coming up this weekend. So they got a 4-game set this weekend against Detroit. So Detroit, not a bad team. Kind of pesky, kind of hanging in there. So not exactly a throwaway series coming up there. So we will preview that. We'll give you our predictions for that as well. And we'll have an additional show coming up this weekend as well. So everyone, stay tuned to the Bastards account, and we will be with you guys next week to recap everything. So everyone have a great night, and we will see you soon. Take care.
Hey, y'all. Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.